morning. May it please the Court and Counsel. My name is Elizabeth Pollack. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Larry Hodge. Mr. Hodge received what is fundamentally a life sentence, 115 years, from the district court in this case. And with such a severe sentence, it is important that we ensure that the district court adequately considered all of the arguments advanced by the defendant in mitigation. This is similar to the preceding case in that it is, again, a situation where the defendant's contention is that mitigation evidence, particularly a lengthy psychological report and addenda that was presented by the defendant in the district court, was not adequately considered, therefore constituting procedural error. It is true in this case that the doctor who prepared the psychological report was present in open court and testified. He was cross-examined by the government, and the district court interjected and asked a few questions of the doctor during his testimony. But the important part here is the judge's actual ruling in determining what the sentence should be under the 3553A factors. And when the judge elicited that ruling, he barely mentioned the doctor's report and did not address several of the contentions that were presented in mitigation by the psychiatrist on behalf of the defendant. What we have here is a case where the defendant had been sexually abused as a child, had a mental health history, and had from a very young age become sexualized and predisposed to commit this type of offense. And the district court even acknowledged that he believed the defendant suffered from a pornography addiction. And although the district court did acknowledge that, there was no discussion whatsoever of the need to protect the public, how the length of the sentence was going to protect the public, or how his possibility to be rehabilitated was going to impact the sentence. This is one of the primary arguments advanced by the defendant in his sentencing memorandum and one of the primary factors discussed by the doctor in his second report, which was filed in open court on that date. And the district court's failure to adequately address that argument is procedural error.
Well, didn't the district court weigh Hodge's past child abuse when it mentioned his abuse and the resulting addiction when talking about the seriousness of the offense, and then ended up saying after reviewing Dr. Cady's report, the defendant does have an addiction to pornography. He's a pedophile. Hopefully he'll receive treatment. But he began that with an acknowledgement of the abuse he had received. Isn't that enough?
He did consider that in the history and characteristics of the defendant and in talking about the serious nature of the offense, but the majority of the district court's discussion was based solely on that and not about his rehabilitative potential, not about the need to protect the public. So that is one of the key 3553A factors, which was not adequately discussed. The fact that the district court did mention his prior history when speaking of his history and characteristics is absolutely appropriate and was properly done in this case, but it is the lack of discussion of the other factors which constitutes the procedural error here.
Well, didn't, but he made reference, I thought, to Dr. Cady's report when he directly addressed that whole likelihood of reoffending by declining to credit Dr. Cady's testimony and saying, I do not agree with Dr. Cady's assessment that the defendant would not be a risk. And you're saying that's not enough.
Well, it's actually very difficult to tell exactly what the district court thought with regards to Dr. Cady's opinion, because I believe the direct quote on page 115 and 116 of the transcript was, I do not agree with Dr. Cady's assessment that the defendant would not be a significant pause, would not be a risk, although I don't think he's a high risk, but he'll basically spend the rest of his life in prison anyway, so this factor doesn't matter. So on one hand, he seemed to agree with the assessment.
Well, hadn't Cady premised his views on his understanding that there had not been contact?
It was one of the factors that was considered, which the government pointed out on cross-examination was actually not true given the nature of the photos that were received into evidence on that date. But we can't tell from the district court's ruling whether or not he bought that argument or not. He simply didn't elaborate on what his position was with regards to that argument that was advanced by the government. And that is fundamentally the argument that I'm making today, is that the ruling was just devoid of sufficient detail. And to answer Your Honor's question from earlier about what should the rule be, if, you know, there are so many of these cases coming up on appeal, we keep asking the district courts to say more and more and more, what should the rule be? And the rule should be that when a primary argument is advanced, the district court should say, I either accept or reject this argument, and this is the basis for
You're asking for a checklist.
Not a checklist necessarily, but when it's the most important argument, when it's sometimes in these cases the only argument a defendant has is his psychological evidence and any letters of support that they may receive.
Sounds to me like the only way that we could meet your standard would be to tell the district courts to go through every one of the 355 factors and check it off.
Only if it's a primary argument.
I have considered this. I consider this a primary argument. I consider this a secondary argument. Counsel, do you think that's secondary? Well, of course, you're going to say no, and then that becomes a primary one, and we're going to, you know, we're going to be back to the obligatory guidelines, where sentencing is going to be nothing more than a checklist. Everybody huddled over their desk, filling out forms.
But the 3553F factors, they are a checklist. I mean, they're a list of factors that the court is required to consider under statute. So why not, if the defendant advances what they call a primary argument, which, again, it's not as though there's a lot of evidence that these individuals can present on their own behalf in mitigation. If it's a primary argument, then the court should address it and should make sure to explain.
How do we ensure that counsel do not use this situation as an elliptical way to simply get a resentencing hearing? And that's what's happening in the cases.
How do we stop attorneys from doing that? Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that's our job.
No, it's not your job. Your job is to point out where the district court's made an error and hasn't sufficiently considered something.
And in a case where the only evidence that a defendant presents is a psychological report, which is presented in mitigation, and the district court did not address several of the items specifically within that report, which was the defendant's basically sole argument for a lower sentence, then yes, it should be remanded so the district court can further and adequately address those issues.
Did you ask the district court to do that?
I was not trial counsel, Your Honor.
Did trial counsel ask him to do that?
I don't believe at the sentencing hearing that they did, no. I think they made their arguments, the judge gave his ruling, the defendant was remanded, and that was how it proceeded.
So the district court was given no opportunity to reconsider the matter because counsel didn't think that he had checked all the boxes.
I wasn't there. I'm not sure exactly what counsel was thinking at that point, but no, they did not.
I've been in your shoes many a time.
That's correct, Your Honor. They did not. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schellenbarger.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Todd Schellenbarger. I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of Indiana. I represent the United States in this appeal. In this case, the district court imposed a sentence equivalent to 115 years imprisonment for a series of offenses involving the aggravated abuse of a child. Such a lengthy sentence should be reserved for the worst of the worst offenders. And based on the nature and circumstances of the offenses in this case, Larry Hodge is in this category. Hodge used a child under the age of 9 to produce numerous, extremely disturbing images depicting the sexual abuse of the victim child.
Well, let's get to the report. Is the mere fact that the district court disagreed with Dr. Cady about Hodge's likelihood of reoffending enough when there is no explanation as to why the court disagreed with the doctor's conclusion?
Your Honor, I think that a review of the entire sentencing record, which begins with the testimony of the expert, which was subjected to cross-examination and direct questioning by the court, to the end of the transcript in which the court sets out its reasoning for the sentence orally as it goes through the 3553A factors, the court addressed each of Dr. Cady's findings. It agreed with some, it disagreed with some. And one of the basis for the findings was a matter of serious dispute in the hearing. I think that's important to point out. First of all, Dr. Cady's baseline for determining, which was a change, he prepared two reports. The first report said he was a serious risk to reoffend. The second report, prepared very late in the process and submitted to the court the day of the sentencing hearing, said he was unlikely and less of a danger. That whole finding was premised on an incorrect understanding of what actually occurred between the defendant and the victim. Dr. Cady's understanding, based on what Hodge told him, is that no actual sex acts occurred between Hodge and the child. That was simply not true, based on the testimony of the agent who discovered the images and reported to the court what they showed. And the court itself viewed those images in Exhibits 3 and 4 in the sentencing hearing, and the court itself had sat through a change of plea hearing on a different date in which 5 separate occasions the defendant admitted he engaged in oral sex with the child. Secondly, Cady's finding was based on an understanding that no force was used against the child. And the lead agent testified that two images showed the defendant forcing the child's face into a degrading sex act involving the defendant's wife, who he recruited in to participate in these acts, breaching the trust that the child had with another adult. So there was, contrary to some of the other cases in this area, there was a significant dispute with respect to the findings in this case. And there was an issue about the change in the doctor's report, which the court was concerned with based on its questioning, from low risk to high risk, and eventually, subject to questioning by the court and the government, the doctor eventually conceded that he can't predict whether someone is a high risk or the probability of reoffending. The court agreed with portions of Dr. Katie's report. The court agreed that he did have a troubled childhood, that he was the victim of sexual abuse, which was learned through the history taken by Katie. And the court stated that this is likely the genesis of his addiction to child pornography. So that was addressed expressly by the court in the sentencing hearing. Unfortunately for the defendant, the evidence offered by the psychiatrist, although its intent certainly must have been to offer mitigation, it indeed was not all mitigating evidence. In particular, Dr. Katie found in his examination that the defendant had, on three prior occasions throughout his life, been a contact sexual abuse offender. And the court viewed this as very serious, it stated, and when it was going through its review of the 3553A factors. And so that factor weighed, finding by Dr. Katie weighed in favor of a more aggravating sentence. The court is obliged to consider the evidence presented by defense in mitigation. But once it considers that evidence fairly, and it's not required to find that all of the evidence is indeed mitigating, in particular in these cases involving persons with a history of abuse themselves or multiple abuse victims, much of the psychiatric evidence that's presented is not going to be simply mitigating. And once the court has fairly weighed the evidence, it's not obliged to determine that psychiatric and background evidence outweighs other major factors among the 3553A factors. And the major factors that the court spent the most time on in this case were the nature and circumstance of the offense, which was very severe, quite obviously, and the court's reviewed the record, and it's disturbing. As the trial court said, simply to review the images for a brief time. And furthermore, the court made a special point of emphasis with respect to the impact of the crime on the victim. Having reviewed the impact statement of the victim's parents, the court believed that the nature and circumstances of the offense favored a more serious penalty because the victim would be a lifelong victim, revisiting fears of these events occurring and having a serious breach of trust of two trusted adults in her life who were responsible for caring for her in this very egregious manner. And finally, the court wanted its sentence to be consistent with other sentences that it had imposed for persons who engage in similar conduct. And the entire sentence, when the court reviews it, is very rationally based on giving the minimum mandatory sentence for each separate harm sustained by the victim and each separate distribution of images of the victim to others. And it was similar to sentences that the court learned had been imposed within the district and similar to sentences this court has reviewed on appeal, in particular the Knoll case, which is cited in the brief. Consistent with its rationale for the sentence imposed, the court refused to impose consecutive sentences for the conspiracy counts involving bringing in the defendant's wife to participate in the acts and giving no consecutive time for that. This case is indeed a case involving an offender who is among the worst of the worst. If one looks to the guidelines, he receives a separate enhancement for being a repeat sexual abuser of children, which is a +5. Also being an offender who engaged in a pattern of activity involving the sexual abuse of a child. The other case, the Cunningham and Miranda cases, which have been cited by Mr. Hodge in support of his position, I would like to point out involved particularly in the Miranda case, much more serious mental health issues than were at play in this case, including auditory hallucinations by a schizophrenic individual at the time that the actual offense was committed. In those cases, there was nothing was contested with respect to the defendant's mental health condition or the findings of the psychiatrist, which is in contrast to this case with respect to the psychiatrist's misunderstanding as to what actually occurred involving the victim. And there was virtually no mentioning or addressing of the issues raised in the Cunningham and Miranda case, where in this case...
Well, here the district court mentioned the child abuse and didn't actually discuss whether it should be considered as a mitigating factor, right?
Didn't use the term mitigating factor, but it's, the court said that that is the likely genesis of the addiction to child pornography and adult pornography. And the court made a specific finding. I disagree with counsel with respect to one point. The court made a specific finding that oral sex did occur between the defendant and the child, and that whole that finding is very clearly directed to the earlier cross-examination and issues raised about what the psychiatrist's understanding of what occurred was. Otherwise, there'd really be no important reason to point that out. But in the context of the serious issue that was raised in cross-examination on that point. See, my time is nearly ending. If there are no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Schellenberger.
For to affirm this.
Thank you. How much time? 3 minutes. Ms. Pollack.
Just briefly, there is no dispute as to the nature of the offense. There is no dispute as to the severity of the defense. Or of the offense. There is no dispute that the defendants in the cases cited by Mr. Hodge in our brief suffered from mental health issues, which included auditory hallucinations and other very serious mental health issues. Neither of those two things excuse a district court from adequately considering a primary argument of a defendant. We reiterate our position that the district court did not adequately consider the mitigation evidence in this case and respectfully request remand for resentencing. Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement.